Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your Wiretaps podcast for Monday, May 18th, 2020. Alex Brown, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
As always, you've selected a number of ApplyWire and DecisionWire entries from our website that we're going to go over. And in the meantime, I wanted to first just, you know, kind of get into some update stuff. I know our listeners like some of the, you know, just some of the features we typically talk about at the top of the show here. Talk to me a little bit about what's happening on the site right now in terms of decisions and, you know, in a time of year that I normally kind of, you can kind of snooze on. I mean, usually round three, late rounds are kind of really quiet, but what have you been seeing?
Yeah, I mean, we're in the midst of what I would call decision weeks for round three decisions. So a number of the top schools are releasing those decisions. And like you say, in previous cycles and previous seasons, that's not really amounted to a whole lot because most of the sort of activity occurs in rounds one and two. But we know through this COVID-19 crisis that, you know, no old rules apply anymore. And actually, schools are admitting more folks out of round three, greater movement off the wait list, and so on and so forth. And we're seeing a lot of that activity on LiveWire. But yeah, I mean, one of the biggest schools last week that created a lot of activity would have been Kellogg. In fact, they've created a lot of noise on the site quite a lot lately for one reason or another. But there's a lot of activity. I mean, again, we're in very uncertain times, uncertain for the schools, uncertain for the candidates. And that uncertainty does translate into activity for us.
Yeah. And I will say I've been making the rounds, as our listeners know. You know, I spend a fair amount of time talking with admissions directors, and you know, I've heard a lot of different scenarios for the fall, which I think points to the fact that, as you say, there's just so much uncertainty. But, you know, I've heard of schools talking about, gee, we're going to probably have to start late, or we're going to be online in some sense and maybe in person for other pieces of the curriculum. And so there's just still a lot going on, a lot up in the air, and a lot of movement as a result off of wait lists and in round three and things. So, yeah, crazy times. The other thing I wanted to mention is we continue to talk with students who are in business school or now wrapping up, you know, their first or second year of MBA programs, just to find out, like, how has it been? You know, because I think people who are listening to this podcast and thinking about heading off to school in the fall deserve to know, like, how's it gone for the kids that have been online with their MBA, you know, the first year and second year students. So we hit Duke, Berkeley, LBS, and INSEAD recently, and we have really interesting profiles of students who are in those programs. In some cases, we have a couple from each school who, you know, will just speak to, like, what, you know, what's it been like, and how's the school managed it. And it's really just very revealing. And I think, you know, in most cases, the students are, you know, obviously they all say would much prefer to be in person. But on the margin, they seem pretty impressed with how schools have managed to handle this and with even how their own classmates are managing and all the activity that just moved into the kind of virtual realm that, but is still going on. So yeah, I definitely encourage people to check out those stories. I wanted to tease something, Alex, that we've been talking about, that's forthcoming, which is a webinar series. We did a webinar a couple weeks back for students who've been admitted to business school to kind of talk through what your next steps are. But we're actually going to launch a whole series, and I wondered if you wanted to maybe just say a few words about that. And this has not been announced anywhere, so people listening to this podcast will be the first ones to know about it. But I wondered if you could, yeah, just intro this for everyone.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, like you say, we hosted a webinar a couple of weeks ago for folks going to business school this fall, with the intention to go to business school this fall. And quite frankly, Graham, I thought it was successful. We had a good-sized audience, but also a very engaged audience. So I think from that perspective, it was very good. And, you know, as a result of all the research that folks at ClearAdmit have been doing, so getting those sorts of level of insights and so forth, we decided, why not host a webinar series for upcoming applicants for the upcoming season? Which I believe we're planning to kick off in the middle of June, Graham, maybe the second or third week of June or something like that. And the first the first webinar in that series will look at What is it going to look like for an applicant applying to business school coming out of COVID-19? Hopefully we're starting to come out of it, but we're probably talking about virtual interviews. We're talking about no campus visits. We're probably talking about recruiters not traveling. So how does that change the dynamic for the applicant? And we're actually going to reach out to schools to get some of those questions answered, hopefully directly from them, so we can engage the audience with that sort of information. And then follow up with I think we've arranged 5 or 6 webinars in the series to take the applicant through the entire application process, based on a lot of the knowledge that we've obviously accrued over several years of being in the industry. So I'm really excited, Graham, because we've kind of played with webinars a little bit in the past, but I think we've got a really good formula now. So yeah, look out for that beginning the middle of June, I think.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the way that we've structured this, it's going to be, I think we're going to do one webinar every 2 weeks, starting sometime in mid-June or so. And I would say if you listen to all the, you know, tune in and join all the webinars, there's just going to be 6 of them. It'll take you through the summer and it'll literally like sort of handhold you through all the key aspects of applying to business school. So I would think, you know, anyone who joins and listens to all the webinars will be better, you know, kind of better set up for success in the admissions process. And yeah, we'll try to keep it fun and interesting. And yeah, so stay tuned, more to come. But again, no one knows about this. And I think as this episode airs, we still won't have put anything out there on the web. So that's a little reward for those of you who listen. You get a little advance info.
We might get 2 attendees signing up.
Yeah, we shall see. That's kind of the main news. I did want to say you're now at 378 likes, so people still continue to like what you have to say, but you are being crowded out by all the starred users on the site, you know, actual kind of members of our community, candidates and, you know, applicants and admitted students alike who are offering really great comments as well. So that's kind of exciting to see. I still am kind of languishing down, you know, behind you. I'm at 186 now. Need to probably, you know, offer more insights on the site to get more more likes.
You're far off being number 2.
I know. Oh, well. Let's move on. Unless there's anything else you wanted to add this week, I think we can kind of move into the folks that you've selected. You picked some pretty interesting ones this week, too.
Yeah, I think a bit of diversity here in terms of, you know, where folks are at with their applications. We're going to talk about a candidate that's going down the deferred admissions route, straight out of undergrad. And then, yeah, hopefully a couple of interesting conversations.
Yeah, so let's start with Wiretap's candidate number 1. So this person is an ApplyWire entry. So a prospective student who is looking to apply to Harvard, Stanford, Chicago Booth, and Wharton. And as you pointed out, this person is doing the kind of deferred enrollment option. So this is a college student applying to these schools, hoping to get an offer and then to go work for, depending on the program, it could be anywhere from 2 to as many as like 5 years, and then start business school. So just kind of get that offer in hand. They are currently working, although they are a college student, their work experience to date has been kind of on the tech side, in sort of strategic planning. And post-MBA, they're thinking consulting, always a safe bet. And, you know, Bain, BCG, and McKinsey are on the list. I chuckle just because it's so common to see those 3 firms. GMAT score, 750. GPA, 3.87. This person's in Chicago and hoping to land in, like, New York, Chicago, or San Fran in the longer term. And they did say that they would love to be featured on the podcast and that they haven't heard us talk about deferred admit applicants in the past. So, and that may be true, actually. I don't know that we've really touched on this. So
I don't know, Graham. I think that's a sure sign. This person hasn't listened to every Wiretaps episode.
Maybe we did have one. But anyway, I think it's still, you know, still a good topic. But you had some dialogue with this candidate, and it is interesting because they're early, right? So they have some very interesting questions. Take it away. What do you think about this person?
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, Graham, this is a superstar in the making, I think. In terms of, you know, if you look at just overall raw potential on the numbers, 750, 387, they did actually ask, potentially retaking the GMAT. They're a bit disappointed. They should have got a 770 based on their practice tests. And I'm like, you know, the numbers are not going to eliminate you at this point.
Absolutely,
for candidates going this route of deferred admissions, you've got to have super numbers. I mean, you don't have that professional full-time experience piece of the pie, so there's just going to be much more emphasis on the other numbers that you do have, right, and the other activities that you do have. But at the end of the day, a 750 GMAT, ridiculously good. So well done for that, 387 GPA. So what else does this person need to have done? They need to have done well in their internships, and you know, I would assume that has been the case to date, but only they would really know that, as well as be super active and committed and engaged on campus. So to the extent they've got a little bit more time to work on that, you know, they're obviously going to their final year now as a senior in college. They've got time to develop that further if they don't think it's quite up to scratch. I do like their attitude. Only apply to the best if you're applying deferred admission, because if you don't get into the best, go to work and then reapply 2, 3, or 4 years later. There's no advantage of applying to a safety school through the deferred admissions process. Wouldn't you agree to that, Graham? That would seem like a not a smart thing to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a great opportunity. Just roll the dice and go for the best, see what you can get. You know, I thought it was interesting. Did you notice that this person said that they have a full-time job offer already? So I guess they're doing an internship this summer.
Yeah.
And they said it's with a tech company, and they didn't, you know, they gave us some examples, but they didn't say which one. But and then they indicate they have a full-time offer, which I presume is for, you know, like over a year from now.
Yeah.
But I guess that's, you know, that's terrific. So they already are kind of going to land on their feet. That may, I guess that could influence the admissions officer's view of the file, in the sense that I do wonder, with deferred enrollment, do admissions officers say, okay, we're admitting this person under the assumption that they're going to go do something interesting for a couple of years before they show up? And so I guess to the extent that someone can show that not only do they have a plan, but it's sort of already underway, that could be helpful. I do agree. Don't take the GMAT again. 750 and, you know, the GPA, what was it, 387. I mean, this, like, it's sort of, you're done. Like, I just put that aside. I did have some questions, though. Like, I think, you know, superstar in the making, as you say, but I kind of wondered, like, what are they studying and where? Because, you know, that could have some impact on it. You know, is this person at, like, one of the best colleges in America studying something incredibly challenging, or are they at, you know, sort of a school that's maybe less well-known in an easier major? So that, you know, could play a role. I'd want to know that.
Yeah, but my counter to that, Graham, is let's say they are at a state school and not a very well-known school.
Mm-hmm.
If they have internship and full-time offers at high-growth tech firms, which is what they've indicated in their notes, I'm like, you've got to be a superstar to have managed to acquire something like that out of a university that doesn't typically interface with that caliber of employer.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair.
So I would assume, based on the opportunities this person has, that they are actually at a very strong university. But if they're not, then I think there is still a very positive spin in that story.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, I think, yeah, it's fair. I guess I was kind of curious to understand.
Yeah.
Only because I wanted more on the career goals. And I thought, like, you know, normally when you know what someone's studying and what their passion is, you can kind of, you know, because we don't have work experience really to go on, or not much of it. And so I just wanted to get a better sense of, like, what's driving this person? What are their outside activities? And you pointed out they need to kind of probably work on their, you know, extracurriculars and outside interests and things to sort of bolster that piece, because it didn't seem like that was sort of pushing to the fore. So I know you kind of gave them that advice.
Yeah. Well, and they knew it, because they said, my ECs aren't spectacular, but I'm going to work on them next year. And I would say, absolutely work on them, and don't work on retaking the GMAT.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I would get out there right
you know,
now.
Double down on the ECs and be very happy with the rest, you know, the other side of it.
Agreed. The only other thing I wanted to cover with this candidate is they asked a question, which we haven't responded to, which was, they were wondering about recommendation letters, right? And they said, should recommendations come from, like, this summer's internship, Like how should they go about sort of dealing with that piece of the file? And did you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I think, you know, the three sources of recommenders for a candidate like this, i.e. deferred candidate, one, you would hope at least one would come from a professional setting. So the internship experience, built up a relationship with a mentor and so on and so forth from that avenue, that would be good fodder for a strong recommendation, I think. Obviously, because they're still in college, it might be that you've done some particular piece of work and research, or whatever, with a professor, and that might work in this context. Obviously, typically with MBA programs, we don't recommend professors, but this is different when it's a deferred admit and it's someone, they're a junior going into their senior year. So it might work in that regard. The other is if they're really active on campus and they have strong impact in various club activity or whatever, it's getting a recommender from that source. And I always think in this context, that's a great potential route to take. But yeah, I would defer to you a little bit on this too, Graham.
Yeah, and actually, I apologize because I hadn't seen that you did say that the internship supervisor could be a good source for recommendation. And so I guess the only thing we need to help them with is thinking about where else do they get letters from.
Yeah.
And so I agree with you. I mean, I think typically for a deferred enrollment candidate, you need one professional from an internship or, you know, some job you've maintained part-time. Ideally one that's pretty glowing, that shows your kind of leadership potential. And then you need something from campus. And typically that's going to be faculty. So ideally it's like a professor that's, you know, taught you and knows you really well, maybe even been an advisor to you. And in many cases, when you talk about those extracurricular recommenders that could, you know, like maybe you're involved in something on campus, those are often faculty as well. And so ideally, like, you kind of triangulate in and find the faculty member who's taught you and who happens to be the kind of faculty liaison for some club or conference or whatever you're involved in organizing on campus, so that they can speak to you holistically, you know, not only, oh yeah, this, you know, Alex was great in my class, but also I've, you know, been a liaison to this club that he manages and he's been terrific there, blah, 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 right? So I think that's the way to go. And hopefully this person will have that. I think, yeah, in most cases, it's just going to be two letters. And again, one professional from an internship or something, and one, you know, academic or kind of faculty oriented.
Very good.
So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this as well is going to be an Apply Wire entry. This person wants to start in the fall of 2021. So they're going to be applying this coming year. And they're looking at Duke, LBS, Chicago, Wharton, UVA Darden, and Yale SOM. They have been working in corporate finance at a big four, and post-MBA, they're thinking consulting or maybe even possibly investment banking. The companies they listed were all consulting companies, so if they take that route, it's Bain, BCG, Deloitte, McKinsey, PwC. The GMAT score this person has earned is a 720. GPA is 3.40. They've got 4 years of work experience. They are located in Indonesia, so this person is an Indonesian citizen. They're hoping to land in the U.S. post-MBA. Don't really care where in the U.S., but would like to come and work in the U.S. for the near term. They are male, they mentioned that, and they also mentioned that, I guess he said that he is attended the number one engineering school, so kind of the Indonesian MIT, and majored in mechanical engineering, but then took that degree and ended up working at KPMG as a consultant, and then more recently with Ernst & Young as a corporate finance consultant. So pretty traditional kind of business-oriented work, despite the engineering undergrad. And, you know, again, just sort of looking at what we think their chances are, they were wondering, like, are they overrepresented? They have some ECs, but it's not nothing crazy. They help some underprivileged folks in their community, but it sounds like that's informal. And they're also a scuba diver and done extensive scuba diving. But what's your take on this candidate? I mean, it's kind of an interesting case. Like, are Indonesians overrepresented, underrepresented? What's the deal? And how competitive is this person?
Yeah, I mean, I do think this is a very interesting candidate to talk about, in as much as, you know, they have some really good credentials, but what stands out? What's going to be the aspect of this candidacy that a business school is going to be like, we really want to get this candidate into our program? I don't think there's anything wrong with this candidate, Graham. You might argue, well, the GPA is a little bit low, but I mean, it's from their top engineering school in an obviously engineering major, so that 3-4 is probably a pretty good performance, and their GMAT 720, I mean, that's a good performance. They've got 4 years of experience. You mentioned some brand name companies, some pretty standard stuff, and I say standard stuff for top tier programs. I'm not saying standard stuff for us regular people. I mean, this is all very good stuff.
Yeah.
What I would like to see is, what are this person's sort of personal qualities, their engagement, their activity? Like, is this, when this person walks in the room, do people like get fired up? And is it, are they really engaging and so on and so forth? Or are they the quiet person in the room and not super engaging? It's quite hard to get that read from reading the materials that the person provided. Their activities outside of work, they're okay, but again, seems a little bit informal in terms of the helping kids from poorer backgrounds, I guess, with their CVs and stuff like that. I think that's cool stuff to do. I would really try to ratchet that stuff up and formalize it a little bit if they can, and show that they do that maybe with other people. Maybe they mentor other people through that process to do it. The diving, scuba diving, that could be quite cool. I've got some friends that do scuba diving, and they're actually very sort of outward going type folk, but again, I don't really know in this particular case. So I'd probably want to get a bit more of a read on that side of it. I would suggest that they need to probably apply early, I don't think they're going to be considered from an overrepresented country, but I don't know that they, admissions folks be like, oh great, that person's from Indonesia, we need to get them into the program. It's kind of like a middle, almost like a non-issue in terms of the particular location, I suppose. But yeah, great. It's a little bit perplexing for me, Graham, because I like the guy. I know in any normal world this guy's really outstanding, but when you're talking applying to very top tier business schools, there's going to be quite a lot of similar folk applying with similar types of credentials. So I really want to see how this person can stand out.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I think that, as you say, numbers are fine. Nothing's off the charts, but solid university. And I think Indonesia is not an overrepresented country in the way that maybe India would be or something, but it's also not the most underrepresented country in the pool. So they do see candidates from this market. I think this, I agree with you. Scuba diving is kind of interesting. And to the extent that this person has anything, do they belong to a dive club? Are they out very often? Are they, do they have that kind of wanderlust and explorer, kind of explorer's persona that you kind of associate with divers? That could be interesting. I think that the one thing that sort of struck me is they mentioned they want to work like maybe at McKinsey or Bain or, one of these top firms, but to do like corporate finance consulting. And I was like, that's really specific. And I was a little, I just think about most MBAs who go on and work in consulting. It's often, you don't really choose what you're going to do right out of the gate, but you can have a longer term goal. And I did want to mention that this candidate's longer term goal is to help return, kind of return to Indonesia and be a part of what they view as a very, an economy with a lot of, losing my train of thought, with a lot of
the upside.
Upside. Yeah. Thank you. So yeah, just the ability to, be part of the growth, that country's clearly going to see. So I like that. I just wondered if there could be some, is there something specific that they like about the work they've done to date? And, maybe there's an industry focus, and I know they're saying corporate finance, but I'm also just thinking they mentioned banking as a possible career. And so it just was a little fuzzy for me. I want more information here. Similarly, the school selection was a bit, I couldn't follow it. These are all great schools. There's no doubt. But it's not like they just picked, US top 10. I mean, they have a little bit of a range. They also have an international school in LBS. I was trying to figure out what drove this selection, because they have schools that are smaller, schools that are fairly large. And I was just trying to figure out what's the driving force here, other than that, you know, the total absence of like West Coast schools. So it sounds like they maybe want to be in the East Coast, but
right.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out how they pick these programs, and maybe I'm missing something. Maybe there's like a STEM OPT consideration if this person's international, wants to stay in the US, but I don't know off the top of my head if all of these schools have STEM or not. And yeah, I just was trying to get my head around what drove selection. Again, there's nothing wrong with any of the schools on the list, and you know, they could probably all place in consulting fairly easily, right? But I was trying to figure out how they arrived at this list.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point. And I'll finish this off with or something I had in my notes, but I forgot to mention, but you've brought it up, so I will reaffirm it, is the importance of this long-term goal over the short-term goal. Because on the surface, if you read this, it's almost like, well, this person's using the MBA because they want to get out of where they are. They want to go to America.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what the AdCom wants to infer when they're reading applications. What they want to infer is this person ultimately wants to go back to their home country where they can make a much more significant impact. And that's added on at the end here. I like that long-term goal, but I would put that more central to the message. And I, as you say, Graham, I'd get a bit more focus on exactly how this person intends to do that. What is it about what they've done to date that really affirms that they feel that they're going to be empowered to do something like that, and really build the story from that end goal backwards?
Yeah, and I will say, just to add on to that, I like the idea. To me, there's a very clear storyline, which is this person is doing kind of big four, you know, finance and kind of consulting in Southeast Asia. And so I understand, like, let's go to the US, get a great management education, and then, you know, play in the big leagues at some of these big consulting firms and do high level strategy consulting with, you know, with US companies or whatever, so that they can bring all that skill and everything that they've seen back,
yeah,
you know, to Indonesia and that kind of thing, right? So that makes sense to me. I need to hear it a bit more,
yeah,
in their storyline. So they'll work on it. I wish them the best of luck and really appreciate them sharing. And they actually thanked us in advance for, you know, for input on their candidacy. So super polite. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Anything else on this, or should we move on to our final candidate for the week?
We've got 2.5 minutes, Graham, so let's move on.
All right, here we go. So this is Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a DecisionWire candidate who cannot decide where to attend. They've been admitted to Duke, UCLA, and UT Austin. They did apply to, obviously, those schools along with Tuck, but did not make the cut at Tuck. So they're holding these 3 offers. They're going to start this fall, and they want to work in tech after business school. And the companies they are considering are Apple, Google, Microsoft, and some others. They didn't name them, but they just said other. GMAT score was 710, GPA 3.84. This person is in Philly, go Philly. They are kind of really grappling with this because they pointed out in their note that UCLA and UT send a higher percentage of students into tech. They also really like Austin. They view it as it's a growing tech hub. But they're worried that the networks of those 2 programs are a little bit limited, and that they are heavily focused on specific geos, you know, Texas and kind of California. They think that Duke has a larger national presence and also sends a good percent of folks into tech. And they also think Duke is considered generally to be a tier higher than the others. So this is all their comments. And then, you know, our site users chimed in, and there was a lot of back and forth. So what do you make of this and this decision they got to make?
Yeah, a couple of things that I wanted to address up front. One is this idea that Duke's sort of presence is more national, and McCombs and Anderson is more local. Well, I agree with that. I think the data might be exaggerated by the fact that Texas and California are large states and will have a large base of employers versus North Carolina, which is a great state, but on a relative scale probably doesn't have the same scope of employment. I think that's fair to say, right, Graham?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, obviously you have the research triangle and things, yeah. But I think, you know, but California's.
Yeah, yeah. No, triangle. No doubt. Durham research triangle and all that stuff is there. But I think just on the raw data, Duke look a bit more national,
sure,
versus the other two, simply because there's less local. And it's kind of like the argument that, you know, international schools tend to have a much more diverse international student body than US schools. Well, the base of those countries is very different, right? So, you know, US has 300 million folks, so they're going to have a higher proportion of domestic students. Anyway, that's just one point I wanted to make. And obviously we've gone over 30 minutes, so now I can talk for as long as possible because we've not hit our goal. The other point is, I lived in Texas for a little bit. It wasn't for very long, and I am English, so things are very different for me. And it is like going to a different culture, which is great. So my point being, you know, is that where you want to live long term? That's fine. That's very good, but it is quite different. And I think the assessment from the folks that chimed in on this discussion is pretty correct. So I'll just read the first one. And it's actually from a contributor that has more likes than you do, Graham. So they must know what they're talking about. McCombs is great for tech, which we know. And if you are open to Austin, this is a no-brainer. However, as you rightly point out, few qualify, that's where they came up with that word. Fuqua is definitely a tier above the two and will give you the best opportunities in tech. Congratulations. And, you know, I don't have to absolutely agree with that sentiment, but I think the sentiment's reasonably correct. Personally, I'd put Duke slightly above Anderson, slightly above McCombs in terms of tiers. But, yeah, if you want to work in Austin, I think McCombs is probably a great choice. But if you want that flexibility, then it becomes a very different discussion.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one in the sense that the original poster who you know put up their undecided situation also mentioned that 70% of the grads from UT stay in Texas and 70% of UCLA folks end up in California. I don't know if that's short term or long term, and I honestly didn't fact check that, so I want to just put that out there. But they did mention that, and we do know that even, you know, when you're dealing with even the top schools, which these are all top schools, there is a geographic pull for business school.
Yeah.
You could literally draw a circle around, you know, any of these schools within like a 5-hour kind of driving radius or something, and you'd find that like you'd hit a ton of alums in that circle, right? So that is something to think about. I do think it's interesting that they, what I'm hearing from this candidate is that they love Austin, which there is a lot to love about Austin. I mean, it's a, you know, it's not only a, you know, interesting kind of tech, growing kind of tech hub, but it's also, you know, a really fun town to live in and obviously maybe easier to navigate than say Los Angeles and probably a lower cost of living as the poster pointed out. I would argue though that, and this is tricky, but I would argue that if you think about Duke, I think of it as being slightly more selective, you know, which is probably due to its higher ranking and stuff. It's a little more, I think, more geographically diverse in terms of where people end up for the reasons you cited. I do think it might be a little, it's sort of more globally recognized, you know, alumni network scattered more across the globe. I think Duke is certainly able to get this person a job in tech. I presume most of our listeners know that the CEO of Apple graduated from Fuqua. So clearly people from Fuqua go on and do things in tech, like running Apple. And, you know, and then the last thing I would say is, and this is something I never thought I would have mentioned, and that is that I wonder to what extent a place like Duke may have more success starting the program in person this fall than schools located in major metros like Los Angeles or on really large campuses with tons and tons of students like, say, UT. So I don't know the answer to that. I'm just, it's pure speculation, but it is something to think about as well. So
yeah.
Anyway, I think that our site users seem to be pushing this person in the direction of Duke. And I think for all the reasons I just outlined, I think that does make sense. But again, if they love Austin, love the experience they had it when they visited or whatever it might be, then no one's going to fault them. I think that if, you know, all things being equal, Duke comes out ahead in this competition.
Yeah, I would agree. Little bit of a mixed bag in terms of the advice provided. Not all universally pushing for Duke, I will say, but yeah, good conversation on the site regarding this particular decision. But yeah, I think Duke just gets the nod.
Yeah, it's a tough call.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand all the variables in play here. So in any event, appreciate, obviously always love to see these undecideds. I know people on the site love commenting on them and giving advice, and we love discussing them on the show. So keep them coming. And Alex, again, thanks so much for picking these out. I guess we'll get together next week. I do want to just say, you know, we kind of, we've gotten into the routine of recording these all the time. And, you know, I do want to just still mention that we know times are not easy for everyone. And it's, This has been a really challenging and unique time period. I try not to dwell on it too much as we do the podcast, because I know people maybe want a break from the news cycle, the 24-hour news cycle of COVID-19 stuff. But definitely appreciate your support on the podcast as we continue doing this. And we hope everyone is, you know, managing to socially distance and stay healthy so that we can all go to school in the fall or apply this year and everything kind of goes smoothly.
Yeah. Stay safe, everybody, and best of luck.
All right. We'll see you next week. Thanks again, Alex.